I have just left a meeting being held at the Kaiser Family Foundation on men and mental health disparities. And so it is appropriate that I come here now and be a part of this session on how we measure or assess men's health from a statewide perspective as a way of engaging audiences. We know that even the American Public Health Association does not yet have a section dedicated to men's health, even though we know that the disparities are greatest, particularly among men of color. So hopefully we will continue to grow the work over the future years. The presentation today will include three report cards. When we initially submitted the abstract, we had only North Carolina, but now the sites have collaborated and we have also a report card on Denver and New Mexico. So what we will do is talk about those three report cards, and they will present them in about 10 minutes. And they will also talk about some of the methodology that is used in developing the report card, and after that, we can answer any questions that we may be able to, that you may have. So shall I start with North Carolina?
Hi, I am Roxanne Lepper with First Health Community Voices, one of eight Community Voices sites. And one of the areas as a Community Voices grantee that we are charged to work on as a focus area was men's health. And when we first were charged with that, we were like, well, what does men's health look like? You know, there's a women's health report card, there's a child health report card, there's a mental health report card, there's an adolescent health report card. But when you went out there and looked for what does the health of men look like, there was nothing out there in one place that told you what the health of North Carolina men looked like. So we started to look at that void and decided that that would be one of our projects, was to figure out what did men's health look like in North Carolina. So we embarked upon this project, and like Dr. Treble says, we'll share our methodology, our indicators, a summary of our results, and then there are a lot of stories behind the development, and we can get into that during the Q&A. First of all, recognizing partners, First Health Community Voices did take the lead on the project, and Community Voices to provide the funding for the project. However, we did need help accessing some of the data and getting some of the data points filled in that were not publicly available on public data sites. So we did consult with the Cecil G. Shepps Center for Health Services Research, and they did provide their services free of charge as community benefit. And then we also, needed input from the larger public health arena in North Carolina and did consult with the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Public Health Division. We use data sources, both national and state-level data sources, and you'll understand that why when you see our methodology. We used the Vital Statistics, the BRFSS data, the State Center for Health Statistics, the HIV-STD surveillance, the Department of Corrections, Bureau of Labor Statistics, and U.S. Census Census Bureau. And there are copies of the report card with all of these sources listed in the back of the room. Our grading methodology, there's a slide in three slides that probably should have gone before the slide. So I'm going to go ahead and fast forward to that and then come back to grading methodology. And that is comparison groups. And this was very important for us. We're going to look at the health of men, but who are we comparing them against? And through a lot of decisions and answering questions, we finally made the decision to compare North Carolina men past to present and North Carolina men compared to U.S. men current. And where data was available, we did break down ethnic groups to look at health disparities and where those lie within the male population. Then if I go back, once we determined our comparison groups, we did have to then figure out, well, how are we going to make the numbers equate to something? And what do people understand? And our target audience was mainly policymakers to increase some awareness about what men's health issues are. So we had to find something that legislators would look at and be like, A, that's good. F, okay, that's bad. Something quick, something that they wouldn't have to sort through too much. And so we did go with the A, B, C, D, F grading scale with greater than 20% improvement for the trend, 10 to 20% for B, in between, where we consider kind of no improvement, was a C. They didn't get worse, they didn't get better. 10 to 20% for D, worse, and 20%, greater than 20% for an F. And that's in trend, so that's North Carolina men past to present. The next thing we had to decide was, comparing to U.S. men, do we want to use that same methodology? And we did decide that, and we used the same letter grades with the same percentages. We did look at 7 health categories, and those were chronic disease, infectious disease, substance abuse, mental health, violence injuries, barriers to health, preventive health practices, and dental health. And overall, in those categories, we had 32 health indicators, as you can see in the report card. A summary of those are that 5 of them improved, the men improved, and this would be NC men past to present. 6 of them, North Carolina men, got worse, and then 66% or 21 were unchanged. And now I'm going to introduce Chris Hoffman, who is going to go over some specific findings from the report card.
So the first thing when looking at the men of North Carolina is we wanted to know, who are they? What do they look like? You can see here a comparison of North Carolina men versus U.S. men as far as what the racial breakdown would be. And it's key to keep this in mind when we're comparing North Carolina men to U.S. men for different health indicators. If you look at the top African American men in North Carolina, they make up about almost 19% of the population. In the U.S., it's only about 11%. So there are some illnesses that are just more prevalent among African Americans than other racial groups, and that can cause a difference between North Carolina men and U.S. men for some of these health indicators. Another one, Hispanic is about 5.6% in North Carolina. It's almost 12% in the U.S. And Asian is where North Carolina is lower than the U.S. as far as the racial breakdown. So just keep this in mind when we're comparing North Carolina to U.S. North Carolina men to U.S. men, that they're not identical as far as races go. And that'll be important when you see North Carolina produces a lot of their information white and minority, or white and non-white, depending on what source you're looking at. So they don't break down for a lot of their, especially mortality statistics, they don't break it down by different non-white racial groups. So everything is lumped together. So what are the racial and ethnic disparities within North Carolina? Just looking at men in North Carolina, the HIV rate among African American men is 515% higher than among white men. And among Hispanic men, it's 124% higher. The homicide rate is 306% greater among minority men than white men. African American men in North Carolina are twice as likely to be unemployed. They also have an incarceration rate, and this is among state penitentiaries, state prisons, 640% greater than that of white men. And overall, for infectious disease, which really is STDs, it's higher in minority men than in white men. What were some overall trends that we saw in North Carolina? There were some areas where men were getting better. Smoking rates decreased by 16% among men in North Carolina. And this was between, for the most part, 2002, 2003, and around 2005, 2006, depending on data availability, but you can see that in the report card. Asthma rates decreased by 11%, and colorectal cancer screenings went up. So now, where are men in North Carolina doing worse? And you see this list is even longer than where we're doing better. Diabetes prevalence went up by about 33%. Obesity in white men increased by 14%. Incarceration rates went up by 10% overall. Uninsured rates went up. Syphilis rates increased by about 31%. And chlamydia rates increased by 22%. So you see there are plenty of areas where North Carolina men really need to be doing better. How do North Carolina men compare to U.S. men? North Carolina men overall have higher mortality rates from things like cerebrovascular disease, lung cancer, chronic lower respiratory disease, and you see those are related to tobacco use. And tobacco use among men in North Carolina is worse than in the U.S. Prostate cancer rates are also higher, mortality rates, motor vehicle accidents, and homicides. Now, if you look at North Carolina minority men versus U.S. minority men, you see, again, some of those same tobacco-related illnesses, then you also have diabetes and colorectal cancer. Again, how do North Carolina men compare to U.S. men? North Carolina men have a higher rate of diabetes prevalence, higher rate of hypertension, and a higher rate of high cholesterol. North Carolina men, that's among minority men. Among all men in North Carolina, again, a higher rate of smoking, 21% higher rate of uninsured, and a higher rate of poverty. And so that's just a summary of the findings that we have from the North Carolina Men's Health Report Card. And you can, there are copies in the back where you can go and look up all these. And we have many of these indicators are broken out by race as far as state-level data was available for us. So now I'll turn the time over to Denver to go over their report card.
We were so impressed with the findings from North Carolina that we in Denver also chose to embark on the road of putting together a men's health report card. And this report card was just released last week to the public, so we're very excited to have it finally finished and out there. Like North Carolina, we had many partners who participated in putting our report card together. Denver Health Community Voices took the lead, and the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, and Jody Driscoll is here with us from the department, and they took a very active part of making this happen. Two different areas in the department, the Health Statistics Section and the HIV-STD Surveillance Section. The local Denver Public Health Department participated, as did the county jail and the sheriff's department and the Colorado Department of Labor. Like North Carolina, we used numerous data sources. They're listed here for you. Vital statistics in order to get the death rates, the BRFSS, the HIV-STD surveillance data, U.S. Department of Labor and Colorado Department of Labor, and the labor market information, as well as the American Community Survey, which provided us with the demographics and poverty data. We have a local Piton Foundation, which actually provides neighborhood-level data, and it's an invaluable source of data for us at Denver Health. Incarceration data was a challenge for us, and we had the Sheriff's Department, the City Jail, the County Jail, the Department of Justice, and the Colorado Department of Corrections all providing us with data for the report card.
And I'll go over the basic findings from our Denver report card. We chose three categories based on 3 to 5 year trends just for the Denver rate alone. Using county level data offers a little bit of a different challenge than state level data. Even though Denver is one of the larger counties in Colorado, it's about a little over 500,000 people and about 220,000 men. And then when you start looking at some of the data sources with BRFSS, maybe in any given year we talk to 200 men for Denver. So we have these huge confidence intervals. And so we decided that we were going to compare Denver men to their historical Denver men. I think another slide that we also did national and state level comparisons as well. So we chose three categories to look at the trend over time, and that was improved. So if the trend was going in the desired direction, unchanged, I think that speaks for itself, or if it was getting worse. So for some of the BRFSS data, some of it was unchanged because the confidence intervals are so large, you can't really say it's getting a lot better. It's statistically different, but if the trend was moving in the right direction for multiple years, then it was improving. So we did the national, state, county level data. We have some broken down by race, ethnicity. Others we don't for the reasons of large confidence intervals. So of those 200 Denver men, we have a fairly small proportion of African Americans compared to other places. So the confidence intervals are huge. our data looks a little different than our other two state folks here. About 50% of our indicators improved over time. 20% were worse, and 30% were unchanged, which is great news for us that at least half of them are going in the desired direction. So these are the demographics of the basic demographics of Denver men. We have about 9% African American, 3% Asian, which is about the same for the state and the nation, a little over half white non-Hispanic, and almost a third Hispanic, and then 1.5% other. And there are obvious racial ethnic disparities when it comes to HIV incidence. I think this is seen everywhere, unfortunately. And the African American and American Indian rates are much higher than the state or the nation. And all the rates for Denver are higher than the state or the nation, but they are getting better over time. So where are we doing well? We always want to start with where we're doing well. And I could, probably should go back to another reason that we chose the three unchanged, improving, and worse trends. We decided not to do grade trends because we've heard a lot of feedback from community that they don't like to be assigned a grade. And certain populations really don't like to be failing at multiple things all the time. They feel really bad and are like, oh, we're failing at this. So we really heard that message and were determined not to get people mad or feel bad about themselves, especially when actually we have a lot of good news to share. So one area that we are doing well is obesity, and less than one-fifth of Denver men are obese. We are lucky that Colorado is actually the least obese state in the country. So overall, in the whole state, we have about 18% obesity. Although we do have a steep increasing trend in obesity, we still have relatively a smaller proportion of obese individuals. For leisure time physical activity, we only have 12% who are not currently engaged in leisure time physical activity. It's a BRFSS question. And high blood pressure is present in slightly more than 20%. Our death rates are improving for heart disease and diabetes, which those two areas are improving in Denver, but they're still higher than the state rates. They're also doing better in colorectal and lung cancer, where we're actually in Denver are lower than the state rate. So we're doing really well that, and all of these are lower than the U.S. rates overall. So our areas of concern are we still have a significantly higher incidence in infectious disease, for all infectious disease, although the one huge caveat with reporting in Colorado is race and or ethnicity is missing in over 50% of the records for reportable conditions. So that is, it's just hard to gauge, but we still thought it was important information to share. Binge drinking is always a problem in our state. We're one of the biggest binge drinking states in the country. Denver is worse than the state as a whole. Actually, we're about the same, but 28% report binge drinking in the past month, which for men is five or more drinks on an occasion. The state, I think the U.S. is at about 20%. This is one area where we are worse than all of our colleagues here. And as well as, unfortunately, suicide. We have a very high suicide rate in Denver as well as in Colorado. The state rate is actually 27.7, where the U.S. rate is 17.6. We've seen this for a long time in the state, and there's all sorts of conjecture as to why, but nobody is completely sure. So other areas of concern are incarceration. There were almost 40,000 males arrested and booked in 1 year, which if they were individuals, it would be 20% of men, but almost three-quarters of these are repeat offenders. We don't know how far back their repeat offense goes, their recidivism rates. So we don't know if they were arrested and booked the week before as well, or if it was a year before or 10 years before. It's part of the shortcoming of some of the data, but it was the first time we were even allowed access to this data, so we were just happy to be able to report anything on incarceration. About 20% of the men are uninsured, which is about 18% in the state, so it's a little higher than the state, although it's probably about the same, and 16% in the U.S., and then 14% of males, this is all ages here, are below the federal poverty limit, and it's only 10% in our state and almost 12% in the U.S. So those are just a few highlights, and next you'll hear from New Mexico.
Good afternoon. My name is Wayne Powell. I'm with the University of New Mexico Health Science Center and a project director for Community Voices in New Mexico. Also with me this afternoon from New Mexico is Tom Sharman, who's an epidemiologist with the District 3, 1 and 3 of the State Health Department. Our report card is not out yet and will be shortly, but we're going back and visiting with partners around some of the areas that we might have some data concerns about, and to take a look at that before we actually put it out on the street. Our partners included in the process the New Mexico Department of Health, especially Tom's operation at Region 3, the Chronic Disease Bureau, our Institute for Public Health at the Health Science Center, our Health Evaluation and Research Office there. We also partnered, we feel, with the Community Voices North Carolina and Denver Community Voices as well in the process. And then a new office of the Vice President for Community Health at the University, which rolls in a variety of our outreach and prevention efforts into one office, and of course the New Mexico Community Voices Initiative. Our data sources, much like the other states in Denver and North Carolina, were confined to available data sets. We used the vital records from the Department of Health, the Infectious Disease Bureau. Everyone has used, I think, in this study to some extent, the BRFS material. We also looked to the UNM Bureau of Business and Economic Research for information. The latest Census Bureau data, which was an interesting exercise, and Tom may share that later. The U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics, and we found shortcomings there, as others have mentioned, in terms of where folks are from, where they are currently within the correctional system, and I might add, we did not find some data on probation and parole, which is another piece of the corrections and justice system database that we'd like to really explore for our New Mexico men. Center for Disease Control and the National Center for Health Statistics, and of course the North Carolina and Denver Community Voices Project. We too found that there was a need for us to take a look at trending data. We have a relatively small population of minority males in the African American community. We have a high representation of Hispanic and a fairly good percentage of Native Americans. But in looking at our database, it would be unfair to use smaller population numbers in order to form trends or modeling for the smaller populated groups. The oldest data available was compared to the most recent, so we took in a number of years in order to accomplish those aggregates of data. And we used risk ratios for those significant trends. And as you can see, we used an up, down, no change. Comparison groups were national and state. And then as in terms of the indicators, we used 30, which I believe is also the number for the other sites initially in the study. We had a 10% improvement in four areas, 26% or eight areas were worse, and 18 of the areas were unchanged. So percentage-wise, we're comfortable with New Mexico not dropping any further. Performance-wise, we're disappointed in the lack of improvement. This gives you a brief profile of the population numbers that I mentioned earlier. Again, a relatively small percentage of African American, Asian, large percentage of Hispanic, relatively diverse, but 9% representation of Native American. And by the way, we did use age 15 and older in our study. So we wanted, yeah. for some of the indicators so we could capture a little bit broader group. So, Tom, if you'd like to come up and go through the data.
It's interesting at this point to make comparisons now with our colleagues from other states. I don't think we haven't got to that stage until this time, right? So maybe that's part of the conversation we can have after this presentation. The slide you noticed of the demographic breakdown for our state, 46% white. That's in 1990, New Mexico looked like Denver does now, with 54% white and 32% Hispanic, and now it's 42% Hispanic and about 46% white, or majority minority state. Even the less Hispanic sections of the state are probably twice the proportion of Hispanics than the national rate. So, as Wayne mentioned, we measured, of course, indicators for those four racial ethnic groups, but we did not test across the racial ethnic groups. So that may be something we can do at a further stage. So the observed disparities that we found, we haven't really tested those for statistical significance yet. So among the improvements that we found, four indicators, as Wayne pointed out, including binge drinking, screening for prostate and colorectal cancer, and the other improvement was the chronic lower respiratory disease deaths went down considerably. We'll talk a little bit about those in a second, but these, of course, were improvements for all races and ethnicities taken together, and we have higher cholesterol rates now than we did 10 years ago for Hispanics and whites in overall. In chronic disease and mortality, we have diabetes increasing for Hispanic and white men, prostate deaths up among Native American men. It was unusual for us to be able to see data for some of our smaller populations. As Wayne mentioned, we did that by aggregating years together in order to have sufficient numbers. A lot of times in New Mexico, we haven't been able to present data on African Americans and sometimes even Native Americans because of the smaller population. This is a first for us to be able to see some of these findings. Stroke deaths were down overall. Lower respiratory deaths, as I mentioned, are declining, but they're half the national rate. Yeah, so that's good news. Among the STDs, infectious disease, we can see that STDs are increasing, particularly chlamydia. That may have a lot to do with much better testing that we have now, particularly for males in New Mexico. HIV is stable and much lower than national rates in New Mexico for men, but among the racial ethnic groups, African American is still the highest, although it's about half of what it is at the national rate. Violence and injuries, we were pleased to see homicide going down among African-American men, and probably two of our more serious indicators, motor vehicle deaths up overall and incarceration up by about 30% overall. No change in current smokers, but suicide is up among Native Americans and white. In fact, suicide overall in New Mexico is more than twice the national rate. It's about 41 per 100,000 for all races and ethnicities. So one of the things I wanted to mention also, maybe it'll help stimulate some of the questions and conversation, the issue of finding all the different denominators to go with all your different numerators was quite a challenge. It turned out to be a little bit more work than we thought. In comparing with other states, one of the comparisons I made instinctually was seeing how well equipped in comparison to New Mexico some of the other state health departments are. As Wayne mentioned, it was essentially he and I and one other epidemiologist who helped to put this together. So we had a little bit of epidemiology staff envy going on there, you might say. turn it over to the moderator. Thank you.
Would you join me in thanking the panel for their presentation? And I think that Tom left us at a place maybe where we can begin, and that is around data. What were some of the challenges you faced in trying to put together your report cards? Because it's clear that there were some differences. So I'll start with North Carolina.
Okay, I'll start. There were a couple bigger challenges we faced, and the first was the we got help from the Shep Center. Anybody who's from North Carolina knows, who's familiar with UNC knows they're the research, community research part of UNC. And an issue that we had was that a lot of the publicly available data, like BRFSS and some other and some census data, it's not broken out in the way that we needed to for this. And we didn't have within our organization the multivariate statistical analysis package to look at the data because the raw data is available. We didn't have the analysis package to do that, and so we had help from the Shep Center in that area. Another area that we really had a concern of with was the Hispanic data. Hispanic, as I showed in our state, Hispanic makes up about 5.6% of the population in 2000. It grew quite a bit between 1990 and 2000, so I don't know where it's at now. We'll have to wait, I guess, another couple years for really good data from the census to come back out. But the state doesn't collect a lot of their information by Hispanic status. They'll just say white or other or non-white or minority or something like that. And so we wanted to break some things out by further racial categories, but it just wasn't available. And we presented this at a men's health summit in January in North Carolina, and we had some people there from the state, and they recognized that that was an issue. And he stood up and said, you know, we'd really love to have more racial information so we can break this down and see, because not every group has the same health concerns. And we really need to look at them individually to see what those health concerns are. But the state doesn't have the information they need, and he put out a call to the county. It's sort of like passing the buck down the line. Put out the call to the counties to report the information back to them at the state in a way that they can then break it down by race. The final data collection challenge, we didn't really have an issue with the denominator, except for one, I'll get to that, is because our state, North Carolina, has a great, and I never realized how lucky we are with the data that we have until I go and look at other states and see what other states have. The North Carolina State Center for Health Statistics puts out a lot of information in a lot of different places, so it's kind of hard to get a picture of it all together, but they put out a lot of great information on their webpage that you can go and look up mortality rates for different things and chronic disease rates and things like that. So we didn't have to deal with the denominator except for the incarceration rate. The data that we got for incarceration rates came from the North Carolina Department of Corrections. They have on their webpage, you can go and they have a tool that you can click through and get all sorts of counts of people who are in the system for different things or being released or things like that. But it wasn't a rate, it was just a count. And so we had to come up with a denominator to try to get that into a rate. So that was the main concern we had with denominator data. So those were a few of the concerns that we faced in North Carolina.
I do just want to add two comments. One, for people who have just walked in or come in late, there are the Denver and North Carolina report cards on the back table, slides from each presentation, a how to create a men's health report card handout in case anybody wants to steal that as a cheat sheet, because there was certain methodology, and again, we can get into some of our challenges. And they weren't just with data. And there is a comparison of North Carolina, Denver, and New Mexico. Also with the data, the way that we chose to grade A, B, C, D, and we can answer questions about why we did that, some of the chronic diseases, when we compared United States men or North Carolina men, minority men, African-American men, past to present, their change, they got an A. But when you compare the rate of that disease against white men, there's a huge health disparity. So although there you see an A there, you'll see an A with an asterisk. And that asterisk means the A is correct for the way that the methodology was for the report card, but we are well aware that that is a health disparity. So where you see the asterisk is where there are some huge health disparities in North Carolina's report card.
Yes, I'll let you ask your question.
Curiosity and
I didn't even know that was there. We were using that on the State Center for Health Statistics webpage. They have cancer mortality rates that are produced there, and so that those are the rates that we used. I don't know if those come from the registry or if they come from. Cancer incidence, right?
They have a long-standing central cancer rate,
right?
Within the State Center.
Okay, for incidence, yeah, there are cancer incidence rates, which are great to have as well. And I think at some point we were modeling our report card, the indicators, the first pass at them, off of the Women's Health Report Card that the state puts out, that North Carolina puts out, and they look at cancer mortality instead of incidence, and so that's sort of the way that we went with it. But you're right, that now that you mentioned it's incidence instead of mortality, that data is available. We just didn't include it in here for that reason.
Any data challenges with Denver?
I'd like to echo the incarceration data challenges. We found it very difficult to ascertain rates because, for example, some rates are determined on people who have been incarcerated and sentenced for over a year, whereas other rates are whether or not they're in the system at all. So for us, the issue of incarceration rates were very difficult, and that's why we chose to report raw numbers rather than trying to come up with rates.
Now, you have about 2 or 3% of your population are African American men, but what percent of your prison population are African American or incarcerated?
Up until the last 6 months, the City and County of Denver did not keep data according to race and ethnicity. So it was very interesting when we contacted them to start this project. They were very excited to share their data, which clearly was pretty much rudimentary and almost and then. But they were also very aware of the shortcomings of the data and recognized that they were unable to provide us with all of the data and the types of data that we were looking for.
Have they changed that?
They have.
And when we looked at the 6 months of incarceration data that they did have by race ethnicity, it was about a third white, a third Hispanic, and a third African American. And so whites are underrepresented and African Americans are more than 3 times overrepresented in the incarcerated population.
And I do have to tell you that when the incarceration data came out, I got numerous questions about that. People had a very high
think one of the reasons we embarked upon these was to find out what the data would permit us to know about populations that are at risk and underserved, and in the case of incarceration, almost suffer from gender discrimination. But the other thing that we know is that the report cards are really sort of a picture, but if there's a much greater incidence of infection behind the fence, and you have 18,000 men there in significant numbers, and significant numbers of African American, you may not get the true picture of infection rates or anything. You know, I'm not suggesting that it's higher, but I am saying we don't know, because the data are not blended in any way so that we get the total picture for what things are like in any group, white, African American, Latino. And so there's a need in the nation to try to combine these data sets so that we can figure out what the real trends are. We may catch somebody from another state in your facility, but at least we've captured the information right now. There's no way of capturing it. I want to skip to dissemination for a minute there. I know that you had some differences in grading, and so maybe I want to couple why you graded as you did and then the impact on dissemination from your perspective, because there were different ways of doing it. Shall I start?
North Carolina chose to grade the way that we did. We first received the data, and just to go back and make one little anecdotal story, when we met with the Shedd Center about this project, the first meeting, we sat down, it was Chris and I, and we took our little data charts as much as we could fill in, and we were all prepared to go, and we grabbed a Women's Health Report card that had the Shedd Center logo on it, and the Shedd Center really pushed back on us, and it was probably one of the toughest meetings that I've sat in for an hour and a half trying to convince them to help us, and you know, when we walked out of the meeting, they had not agreed to help us. And I wasn't quite sure they were going to. And they were really pushing back because they thought we were going to be troublemakers, that there would be unfunded mandates, and that we were just doing this to make people angry. And so it was a very interesting meeting. And by the time we got back to the office, there was a voicemail for me saying, I Googled men's health report cards. And I got zero hits. I Googled women's health report cards, and I got over 4,000 hits. We're in. We'll help you. So this was a new experience. So being that it was a new experience, we didn't have a report card to say, okay, let's model. So we did look at the children's health report card, and we did look at the women's health report card, and we did look at the minority health report card, and we did look at the mental health report card. And there were some things that we didn't like in some of the report cards about the grading methodology. And when we got to thinking, let's take a look at the Women's Health Report Card, but let's ask the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Division of Public Health, for their opinion. So when we met with the Deputy Director of Chronic Disease for that section, he said to us, well, you know, why don't you just use the, because we said, what do we do? Do we use letter grades? Do we use arrows? Do we use... Because we went in there kind of with letter grades on one and arrows on the other for trend. And he goes, no, just put letter grades. If you want policymakers to see this, you need to make it easy. A, B, C, D, F. They understand that. And he goes, that's what the Women's Health Report Card does. And if you want them to look at women's health versus men's health, even though that's not what we chose as our comparison base, if you hold up the North Carolina Men's Health Report Card to the Women's Health Report Card, you can directly compare the two. And I think that was important because, again, meeting with him, a little bit scared of that unfunded mandate stuff, and when people started to see what the health of North Carolina men were, because we know public health is driven by women and children. Just walk through the expo hall. I did right before I came, and I was one booth too. I told Dr. Treble I should have been tallying the number of women and children versus men. So, again, it scared people, but when we used that grading methodology, we chose that A, B, C, D, F based on the women so that you could put the two next to each other and start some dialogue.
Just one clarification on that is that we did use the Women's Health Report Card grading methodology. If you looked at ours, that was like 10%, 20%, A, B, like that. The Women's Health Report Card had enough. rating criteria that was a little fuzzy, and I didn't quite I understood what they were trying to get at, but you couldn't look at it and figure out what it meant, was an A was either a 20% improvement or we're doing really good. And an F was either a 20% worse or we're doing really bad. And so I knew what they were trying to get at. There are cases where we have, like Roxanne was saying earlier, if you look at some things, say, among African Americans, where the rate has gone down, but it's still nowhere near where we would like it to be. And that's what they were looking at, trying to get that is not as good as, you know, it's gone down, but it's not good. But how do you define not good, and what does that mean? And so we wanted to take that, remove that sort of fuzziness from it, and just have the number, and we figure people are intelligent enough to look at that number and see that, you know, we are doing better in that area, but we're not anywhere near where we need to be.
For dissemination, we did take the report card, and Chris and I personally dropped one off at the door of every North Carolina senator and representative. And, you know, as a result of that, there is some interest, and we have been invited by the North Carolina Office of Minority Health and Health Disparities through their health advisory committee to come and present the results of the mental health report card to see if they can take up some of the policy issues. That was one dissemination method. Our first dissemination method was the release. How do we make the release big with a bang? So the first thing that we did was we held a statewide mental health summit, which Chris mentioned earlier. Ironically, on that day, my father had a heart attack. So I actually had to rush to Virginia and go to his ICU bed, and Chris presented the report card that day at lunch. We did have media coverage, both TV and NPR called us. So we did do a national public radio interview, and we continued to get some interest, and we continued to get requests for the report card. Our initial print, we printed 3,000 copies. We went through all 3,000 and actually had to reprint. So we just recently reprinted 3,000. So we have plenty of copies if anybody would like take multiple copies. And if you would like additional copies. Another method of dissemination we used was the Community Voices website. So it is available electronically for download for anybody who wants to go to www.communityvoices.org. And we continue to take the report cards to conferences within the state and working with the Department of Public Health to get the report card into people's hands. Both grassroots so that people can understand what the issues are in North Carolina with men, especially our minority men in North Carolina, and we also continue to put them in the hands of policymakers.
call it.
Yes, this is called a state report card, and this is put out by the Women's Law Center. And there's a couple others that I found. This also has about three times as many indicators as we have here. So these are very much bare bones, well, ours at least is very much a bare bones report, and that's hopefully they'll start getting people interested in.
I guess the question is, why is there a pushback on a report card for men and not for women? And quite often there is a pushback in an attempt to talk about what's happening with men. I don't understand it.
And we had two cases where that happened. The first was at the Shep Center, where their logo was on the Women's Health Report card that had grades in it. And they were pushing back, saying, we don't want to have a report card for men that has grades in it. And the second time was when we were taking it around to the legislators. We're actually getting it to their assistants. I don't know how many actual legislators we talked to. But we ran into one woman in the hallway, and we were giving her the report card. She said, why do we care about men's health? I thought men get everything in health care. And she,
That's why we did.
And, you know, there's a difference between who's studied in, say, a clinical trial of a drug and actual public health, and who's included in public health. So those were two examples we had of that.
Just another comment on this, and it relates to the formation of policy, which I think is what we'd like to get to in our men's health, the national health. But when you're doing report cards in New Mexico, the tendency is to look at other states, and invariably they look at states that are lower. And then they decide, from a policy perspective, they're not doing as bad as Mississippi or whatever the state is below. So rather than
Deborah.
I think
difficulty getting this type of information, even as the nation becomes more diverse, and you may in fact need to look within groups to do planning. But instead of becoming more transparent, it's becoming more opaque in many cases.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I found very difficult to explain to communities is how come the Department of Health doesn't report numbers on African-American population in Mexico. I mean, there was 1.9% of the population in African-America. It's always not these numbers. Some of the combining of years here helped us to get it for the behavioral risk factor survey, and even with
Thank you.
reasons we also thought the report cards were of value is that there really isn't very much in the popular literature about men's health. And we did a survey in using the tool VOCUS that allows you to see who's writing about women's health and men's health. And we had 2,000 women writers and 17 men's health writers. So it does say, too, that perhaps this is information for people who might want to develop a story, because there's no way that they could actually make all of the decisions that have been made here. So our hope is that there will be other report cards generated across the U.S., because there needs to be some way of focusing attention on what the issues are. I want to close and ask for a quick answer from each of you. If you had to do it over again, is there something you would include that you did not include, assuming the data are available?
One thing, North Carolina, that I would like to do, if we weren't kind of rushed by a summit date where we wanted to launch the report card, is I would have liked to have, and I hope to still have, an advisory committee with public health officials at the table, with grassroots organizations, faith-based communities, CBOs, to take a look before the report card is published and to go ahead and maybe put out a couple policy recommendations. But we weren't there yet, but if we do it a second time, I think we could be there, and I think it would be helpful and it would add to the report card. And I know Chris has some data points that we would like.
From an indicator standpoint there, too, the first is Hispanic data. If it was there, we would love to have that. And the second, somebody brought it up to the summit, and my first thought was, why didn't we think to include that? And that's educational status. That's not included in the report card, and I think that was something that we just overlooked, and it was one of those wins where somebody mentioned it and just hits you in the head, you're like, why didn't I do that? So.
And I have to say, cancer incidence might not be a bad thing to add.
Yeah.
Well, it included more time to get it done, I think. Well, but, you know, again, the I think giving the dissemination process is going to be exciting. I'm really looking I know that there's some groups that are going to be excited about this. There's persistent chronic disease. There's a lot of groups working on specific men's groups working on certain issues that they're going to be excited about. So I think it's probably a good idea to give them a little taste of what could be done and then get more involved.
Yes, Wayne.
I'm glad you asked the question, because one thing that bothers me a little bit about the go into some of the good things about things. Single parents who are raising their children, you know, that have households, that was kinds of data business.
Yeah.
The other piece is that I think the health data will have to be isolated unless we can do some of the social and economic impact.
I agree with you. I think that we are planning on a meeting in January to try to bring in some of the people that might object unless they understand where the problem is, and in fact that they might benefit as a single woman, perhaps, through some of the changes that could be made. So we do know that's a second step, yes.
Just to give you a little bit, in North Carolina, back in 1988-89, we did a report on the health of minorities in North Carolina. Lots of folks said, this is going to be trouble. Why do we need to do this? Because it's never been done in the state. Yet that report,
we think that these reports have great potential, but we recognize that, I don't want to say feminists are not for it, but you know, there are a group of women who would feel that it does not benefit them and it is not in their interest. And so we have to translate this into what it really does mean and then continually advocate around the issues, because it gets more serious. We also have to look at health coverage for men. And so we've got to figure out how to do that and not have women feel threatened, because we, in fact, think women will benefit. Let me go to Denise and then back to you. Say you're raising a question that in some ways we just kind of scrambled up here together today and almost have three complete report cards. But it's clear that we are going to publish in journals that we think that people will read who are working in the area. And then as a result of some of our national advocacy work, we are going to get the word out in as many places as we can. We know that we need to be systematic, and we've tried to start groups across the U.S., and they are there, Saving Men's Lives groups. And we hope that with time we might even be able to provide some limited support for others to generate their reports. Now, that really shouldn't be necessary, but I think that there's always important to have a stimulus in a group that's pushing the issue forward. So I'd like to have a conversation with you, actually, about your ideas on how we might do this, just because we haven't quite figured it out yet, but we know that this is a beginning. Yes. Exactly. There is data that says when men work and men are healthy and can work, then the family health improves. And so we know that that will happen. And our mantra is almost, if you really want to improve, without taking anything away from women, if you want to improve the health of a family unit, improve the health of the man, and that may include also education, but you know, we don't want to get distracted because it's also health.
Thank you.
on Medicaid that, I don't know if they're on our website now, but they're on our website, and one of them is proposes a pilot program for how you might begin to engage men in health coverage and then in health care, and another one that points out how Medicaid is failing because it does not include men. So hopefully giving some levers that people can use to change the system, and I think in so doing, there'll be more of a need for these types of documents so that you can measure, benchmark how well you're doing once you get people into coverage. So there's lots to be done, but I think we've come a long way. So I want to thank you. The presentation is on our Community Voices website for anyone who wants to visit it. And I would like for Melba Robertson to pass out some cards to you on an upcoming event. One of the ways that we intend to keep the issue of men's health before the public is to have a conference next April, a Freedom's Voice conference, and we will certainly talk about men's health. We'll have these types of materials available for distribution, and it will also include prison health and reentry and what's happening there. And so we hope to have a number of people attend, and out of that meeting perhaps also get some direction setting that then has at least the weight of some public opinion behind it. We're working closely with CNN, and so we hope also that there'll be some good PR that will support what we do. I thank you very much, panel. It was a wonderful discussion.